are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
Hello and welcome into the Fundamentalist Podcast. I'm your host, dual guest, and I'm joined, as always, by Peter Bog and Richard Donahue. Welcome, gentlemen. Now, dear listener, you may be wondering why we have gathered you here for this episode. If you haven't read the title already, it's because we're going to talk about some black metal. Specifically, the best black metal releases that have come out this year in 2022. I did an episode like this way back when the podcast first launched in 2018. I think it was like the second. Yeah, I think it was like the second or third episode ever published was the top 20 of the top black metal albums of 2018. And I never did it again. But here it is. It's back. Just because there's so much cool black metal that's come out this year, in my opinion. And there's not enough of it that I can put on the top 10 of the overall year list on that episode that's going to be coming out later. So I wanted to share with you, beloved listener, some of my favorite black metal releases that have come out this year. And then the boys have some comments on those releases, and they also have some picks to share with you as well. So let's get into the best goddamn black metal that's been released in the year 2022. Some of it might be on the top 10 list, so this might be redundant if you listen to every episode. Some of it might not be. Anyway, starting off, one of my favorite bands on this list, there's two or three bands that I've been essentially a fanboy of for essentially the entire lifespan of the podcast, and Altar is one of them.
I knew it.
Yes.
Yeah, so Altar, I've been telling both Richard and Pete and Dan, basically anyone who's been associated with the podcast, about this band for quite a long time. They're a Lovecraftian themed black metal band that self-describes also as emotional black metal. So think about that. You've got this Lovecraftian sci-fi lyrical themes, but musically it's very DSBM atmospheric stuff. Lots of crashing crescendos, really, really ominous melodies. Cool shit.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, too. Are they also from Russia, which kind of adds a whole interesting cultural overtone to this group as well?
Not just Russia, fucking Siberia.
Siberia.
Like, the place like the color out of space would take, or at the Mountains of Madness should take place. Like, frozen hellscape is, like, you know, their life. So maybe that explains how awesome their black metal is. Now, their latest release, At the Gates of Dusk, is their third full length. And in my opinion, I think it's their finest work to date. It's a little bit more aggressive than their prior releases, but not a ton more. If you're familiar with their other work, it's not something that's going to be overly apparent. But the longer you listen, I think that does start to shine through. I will say that the album itself, I think it's 7 or 8 songs deep. It's only 46 minutes, which, considering some of the previous Altar song lengths, I think it's pretty manageable, and I think that's on purpose. And whether that's song by song or album as an entire experience, I think that's all infinitely replayable. Bog, I know we were discussing before we got on air how you had given this a listen or two. Do you have some thoughts you want to give on this release?
So I want to mention that I think the variation in the track composition is one of the biggest strengths of every, I guess I listened to all three of the singles. I didn't make it through the entire release At the Gates of Dusk, but I will say My Rope, Innsmouth, and then At the Gates of Dusk were all fairly cinematic compositions. You know, they really have peaks and valleys, you know, sort of quiet moments. And then, I mean, it's still black metal. So either the great, you mentioned it, sort of more aggressive compositions. There are moments where it's very intense, but they're not averse to getting a little bit quieter with it. And then when they reach back in, it is these huge moments where there's a lot of atmosphere, and, you know, they incorporate keys in a really interesting way in a lot of the tracks. And I will call out the track At the Gates of Dusk. I think I commented in the Slack channel that I said this track is outrageous. I mean, it's just some of the best black metal that I've heard in quite a long time. And that's just at our first listen. So I'm going to need to go back and study it a little bit more. But I was very impressed. And in terms of a genre for me, which is starting to feel a little bit tired in atmospheric black metal, I think that they still are creating something that's unique and aggressive, and it sort of salves both the folks who want to listen to the prettier parts and also the people who want the more aggression in their metal as well.
You mentioned also you found yourself really being drawn to, I guess, the virtuosity of the drummer in this case as well. His name kind of escapes me. I'm sure he uses a stage name. I'm pretty sure they all use Lovecraftian stage names, but it reminded me a little bit of the example you used actually was Der Vega under Freiheit, another band very near and dear to my heart that kind of plays a similar progressive black metal style with an overarching like atmospheric and like emotional vibe to it as well.
I'm going to call out Drugged too as well.
Drugged.
Donahue, do you have any thoughts on this release, At the Gates of Dusk from Moltar?
Yes, I actually was able to listen to the record yesterday after a nice 15-hour day at work. I believe it's an EP you recommended to me a few years ago, and I enjoyed that. So I've enjoyed this record a lot. A lot of black metal is going to call it unworldly and things like that, but this actually feels like it. Like, it feels like not your daddy's black metal. There's this little extra oomph to it. And I thought for the most part, the record was great. I really enjoyed the first two songs. I feel like the middle section of the album, Antiques in My Rope, but song wise, I think they're pretty standard, but I like the use of melody and climax in them. But in my humble opinion, the three best songs are honestly the last three on the album. Rats in the Wall, Through the Golden Gates of Dawn, and Innsmouth, just bam, 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 and closes the record off wonderfully.
I like that. I do think the album finishes really strongly. I think they do crescendo really well, both like in song choruses, but as an album and how it's paced as well. I think that the beginning of the album is also a super strong point, but considering how highly I'm talking of this album, I think the whole thing is really a strong point, but I don't want to nitpick here or there. I'm just glad you both happen to agree that this is one of the finest black metal releases of 2022. Anything else we want to talk about for Altars, At the Gates of Dusk, or can we move on?
Oh, check it out.
Okay, so we're going to stick in the same vein of emotional and cathartic black metal, but we're also going to go into the vein of Anonymity is Krieg and wearing denim and leather and maybe some bullet belts and shit on stage. I'm talking, of course, about Guerrilla and their latest release, Mirage. So Guerrilla does its best to convince you that they're not just another atmospheric, depressive, suicidal black metal band wearing denim and leather on stage. But when you listen to this most recent album of theirs, it might have a hard time convincing you of the fact that they're not just another one of those bands doing that. However, this release has a lot of depth, a lot of emotional depth as they're trying to go for being cathartic black metal at all. But there's a lot of dynamics here that aren't at the forefront of the mix that, as you listen, especially with some headphones on, you can really find some awesome moments that are hidden just beneath the surface. And it adds an emotional subtlety, an emotional complexity. I have to say, I don't think this album hits quite as hard in that respect as Altars At the Gates of Dusk, but I think it does a pretty goddamn good job while staying mostly atmospheric. And they don't really ever get super aggressive. It's all about how high on the mountain can we take you before we just drop you into like the dismal spiraling riff that we're all waiting for.
I kind of skipped through this one, and so I feel like it's almost unjust for me to comment on it. But one thing that I would notice is that there were some pretty interesting clean passages sprinkled throughout. And so calling it hyper-traditional, I think, is not necessarily the best. Or, I mean, not that you said that necessarily, but I think that they certainly were putting forth a good effort, like you said, to try and create their own sort of atmosphere and then bring it back down with intensity, like variation throughout the record. It was a pretty interesting album cover too, to give the sort of a shallow critique here, but the golden mask on the black backdrop was certainly striking.
Yeah, that's the same mask that they all wear like on stage, because Anonymity is Krieg, I guess, these days. No one's allowed to like be known in black metal, whether it's Migwa or Guerrilla or how many other bands are rolling around with like either some big fuck off hood or an outright face mask. But I do find that even though Guerrilla doesn't ever get like overly aggressive in that sense, like traditionally, as far as black metal is concerned. There's a decent amount of heaviness here too. I think there's a, maybe it's just me, but I think in general, there is a preconception that atmospheric or DSBM style black metal never really gets heavy. When in reality, I think the heaviness is a really key aspect of the entire genre, because kind of how you make the other parts hit even harder.
When it's done well, right? There are bands who refrain from all of that from time to time. And it's kind of interesting that you say that, because I think that when it's done excellently, we talked about Ultar before, but the variation in the composition is what pulls you out. People always say that contrast is what makes you pay attention to the individual elements themselves. And so when you have a really intense and heavy moment, it makes you kind of appreciate the refrain and the melody in other parts.
A band that I'll try not to mention too many more times, because they're not on this list, but they were mentioned previously by Bog. That's Der Veganer Freiheit. And I think that they do this style of almost progressive atmospheric black metal really well. And they incorporate heaviness back into black metal exceptionally well. Sometimes they're even the highlights of the song, which is kind of hard to do in this style of music, but bands need to stop shying away from it in black metal, I think, because I think it only enhances the product. Anyway, gentlemen, do you have anything else to add about Mirage by Guerrilla?
I'm not, but they're on my short list of black women and been mean to check out. So if you give it praise, I'll definitely move them up the list and finally give them a listen.
Yeah, they're really good. And last thing I'll say about them, I actually just saw them live earlier this year with Spectral Wound here in Prague. And
great band.
Yeah, yeah. It was a fantastic show. And they passed the live test as well. So as they begin to move up the ranks of the black metal genre, definitely keep an eye out for Guerrilla, Portuguese band. Really awesome. Switching continents from Europe. We're going from Portugal over to the North American continent. I believe they're from Canada. I'm switching over to Nekowin and their release, Kanawa Black. Nekowin is signed to Bind Rune Records. It's the same level as Fundamentalist Darling's Panopticon, and one of my favorite bands of all time. And much like Panopticon, they kind of focus a little bit more on natural ties to the earth and other folk pagan influences rather than satanic war cries or anything like that. They also have Native American accents on their folk black metal as well. And that's kind of what really sets them apart aesthetically here. Another interesting thing I will to note about this band, and I think Richard is going to fight back with me on this, is I find that they are essentially the second coming of Agalloch.
Agalloch is... No.
Shut the fuck up and let me finish my point. So Agalloch is
essentially... I can smell the wood smoke from here.
Yeah, so Agalloch is essentially like sacred in the world of USBM just for kind of what they represent, despite the fact that they very rarely ever got heavy or aggressively black metal in any way. But Nekowin does. So Nekowin kind of combines a lot of those folk and acoustic elements that Agalloch does really well, but also incorporates the heaviness and a little bit more traditional black metal sound into it. And in that aspect, I think they surpass essentially what Agalloch initially was to the US black metal scene. And before Richard fucking comes on here and incorrectly says that that's not true, let's be real. Agalloch hasn't put out a record in like 10 years. The genre.
Well, they broke up. They broke up. Active. That's what.
Yeah. Yeah.
They broke. Exactly. They put out a record. Oh, they broke up like 8 years ago. Oh,
shut the fuck up and let me finish. The genre moves forward. The genre moves forward. The last Agalloch release was in what, 2012? I believe it was.
2012.
Something around there. Yeah. The last record's not that great. Even as a fan, I was not impressed with it.
The genre has moved past that sound in 10 years. That's all I mean. No disrespect to Agalloch. Agalloch is important in the world of US black metal.
Goddamn right they are.
I just think Nekowin has picked up the torch and has continued to run further with it. They didn't fucking kill Agalloch and take it from him. They found Agalloch's decrepit corpse on the ground and just happened to pick up where they left off. And I think
they little buddy
fire and continued to inhale the wood smoke. Is that right?
That's right. Now they're making fucking shampoo with it and selling it to hipsters in Oregon. I think the shitty analogy I made to y'all in the Slack channel was Agalloch is Gandalf the Grey. And Nekowin is Gandalf the White. He's been sent back by the Elder Gods to complete the task that was started but not completed in the beginning.
I'll come with you on that to a small extent.
I can't completely, because, you know, there would have been no Hobbit without Gandalf the Grey. And yet Gandalf the White completes the task. So I don't know. That seems apt. If not potentially a little shocking or harsh when you hear it the first time around, but
that would strike you, Mordor Metal Monthly dudes.
Now, I will come along with you, Joe, the fact that really Aglaat was never super black metal. I'm not going to take that away. But it was the fact that when the black metal of Aglaat did hit, that's it more potent, was the fact there's all the other more melodic, acoustic, ethereal moments. I will come with you on that. I'm not saying like the blackest of the blackened folk like Ulver, or it's like early Ulver, not their new weird electronica shit. This record, I did enjoy a lot. I think it's very good progressive black metal. The production is fantastic. Like the mix, how you hear the bass and everything, how it cuts through is very on point. I have a hero notes, not better than Aglaat! !
I have a note here too. Wrong.
Anyways. One thing, and this might be by design, and I did feel though that the vocals were a little underwhelming, but then again, in Aglaat, they were kind of like that as well. So they might be copying from the great. So I'll give it a pass. To me, this is only off one listen. The tracks that stood out to me personally were the title track, the following song, the Murky Deep, which is kind of more of an intro. It's kind of a shorter song, like half instrumental vocals coming at the end, but I think it's really good. And the heaviest song on the record, Generations of War, which is fucking awesome. A lot of good death growls and shit in that. But
I think that's my favorite song on the album for sure.
I'll probably go so far as to say it's my favorite overall. But if you're into some more riff-based USBM that's not all flowery and Aglaat or Panopticon, this is your shit. Check it out, kids.
A lump Panopticon in there.
All they do is share a label, bro.
It's like the same thing, man. I will say that I thought this record was better than the last Panopticon record, I hate to say. I will say that, though.
I've come around to Anne Again Into the Light, man. You haven't seen them live. I think you're the only one, and I think that Duel and I saw them play the same set list. So,
yeah, well, I like that record more than y'all did, and I felt vindicated seeing it live. That shit hits.
The 1 week's the record with the production. So live, the songs probably are a lot better. I'm going to take that away.
And I was fortunate to see them with the guy who composed it playing it too. So I'm not sure if I'll ever see a performance better than that for those songs.
So yeah, that's great.
That's awesome. Influences it. I have one more that I want to share with y'all off my list before I kick it to at least one of you. I want to break up my list so I'm not dominating the airtime and let one of you two share some of your black metal picks with the audience. So keeping with the theme of Native American black metal, we just talked about Nekowin. Another amazing release that came out this year is Black Braid. Black Braid was formed in February of 2022. Yes, that's this year. They came out with a single about a month or two later, and now their full length is out called Black Braid 1. And what little my appetite was wet earlier in the year could not have prepared me for the quality of this release. It's not super traditional in any real black metal sense. They remind me a lot of my band, honestly, in the sense that we're also not super traditional. Their drum beats sound a little mellow death / metalcore influenced, as is some of their riff choices, which sounds blasphemous to some people. I know some people have already turned off just hearing that, but I think it adds a lot of dynamism or variety to the riffs, as well as the folk, pagan, Native American elements and those instrumentation. I guess like the flutes when they come in are really fun. There's a lot of nice interludes on this album. And I think it's 8 songs, 36 minutes. It's got a lot of replayability to it. And despite the fact that it's a folk, pagan, atmospheric black metal release, the songs are pretty recognizable. You find yourself wanting to listen to this album more and more and more. There's a lot of charisma for this being a one-man black metal release, especially giving all the caveats and aesthetics that sound to it. But I gotta say, it's one of my favorite releases so far this year. There's a lot to love here.
Yeah, Duel, I'd love to go ahead and start to dote on this myself, but I want to say that his vocals are probably the most dynamic and possibly my favorite of any band we're going to discuss in this episode. He's really singing harshly. He goes up and down all over the place. He's got pretty good enunciation. You can actually understand what it is. It's not just a blanket of sort of aggression laid on top of the guitars. We talked about some of the core influences, and again, I'm really hesitant to mention it. I think that people who, I think the black metal heads are probably going to cringe when they say that, but for me, the core influences there are reflected in the production and sort of the brightness and distinctiveness of the leads that you see here, and then there are also really distinctive kind of breakdowns, and not, you know, big deathcore breakdowns, but there are you know, good tempo changes within most of the tracks, as well as a few distinctive acoustic tracks that break up the overall album listening experience. A lot of times I feel like those tend to be just a lot of rehashes of the Call of Cthulhu in so many ways. I think that all of these ones actually, not only were they well produced and the acoustic guitar sounds fantastic, but the riffing on it as well is actually quite impressive. I said that I think that these are carrying the rest of the tracks because they are such a gasp for air in everything that's happening. I was really pretty blown away by you know, a one through listen of Black Braid One. And to hear that this band is so new is actually kind of exciting because I feel like these guys might be one of the new flag bearers going forward. I was totally
this guy,
blown
away. This guy, one man.
Yeah. He's doing a phenomenal job, and I would say of the one-man black metal projects, one of the things that I want to applaud him for is his unabashed investment in production quality. I think that one-man black metal projects so often rest on the laurels of cult production, and this sounds like it came out of one of the most professional studios in Los Angeles in the United States, and you know, they're in northern sort of upstate New York. It's fucking phenomenal. I was kind of blown away by this release, if you couldn't tell by this sort of gushing monologue here that I've gone through, but really, really fantastic release.
I enjoyed this a lot more than I expected to. So, you know, usually I see these critical darling black metal releases, you just roll my fucking eyes. But I felt this record being 36 minutes was really concise. There's a lot of cool tempo change. Honestly, I felt there was, I would say, a noticeable like melodic death metal influence on the record as well.
100%.
Yeah, 100%. Which I enjoyed a lot. To echo my co-host Pete, I actually felt the acoustic, you know, the short acoustic songs actually helped the record flow instead of just being there to put them there, which I feel a lot of songs like that are put onto records or like intro songs that are most of the time pointless, let's be honest.
Right. It's kind of just to remind you that they're pagan or something like that. Whereas
these
felt like they had very distinct and purposeful you know, inclusions. That's what I really liked about it.
Oh, 100%. Most of the time I would skip these. These I actually wanted to listen to them. I was actually excited to listen to them.
Instead I love that line, have to remind you that they're pagan, because it really is such a add-on. It's not like a sticker on your car. It's like a bumper sticker on your car for a lot of these bands. Like, oh, yeah, and we're pagan. We'll put a Thor, Mjolnir, like a Thor's hammer fucking sticker.
Correct.
On our album
cover. Some runes, on the back sleeve, right?
Yeah.
But to even echo what Duel said, that it being so short, I guess you got re-listenability to it. And it's very catchy as well, which is another trait of Mellow Death as well. But overall, I enjoy this record a lot. I would say my favorite tracks would be the opening song, The River of Time Flows Through Me, the third track, Sekandaga, probably. Mispronounce that, and the following track, Barefoot Ghost Dance on Blood-Soaked Soil. Now, one thing Pete praised the production, I personally would like it's just slightly stripped back, just like a panache, not too much, just a little edge to it, especially, you know, with the, you know, log and noted history of Native Americans, a field, give it a little more punch to it, personally, but Minus that, though, it's a fantastic release, and hell, it might show up in my top 10. You never know. You'll have to wait and see. But big surprise.
Yeah, I was going to say, as Duel puts it, sort of the Children of Bodom defender here on the podcast, I got to say, I always love some really clean, slick production like that when it's done well. But it's an interesting take for a black metal band, especially with some kind of folksy pagan point of views. I will say, we've talked about this before, but there was a little bit of this Black Braid 1 album that reminded me a little bit of that first Abigail Williams EP, Legend, which, I mean, for all of us, we love that shit, you know? So if you haven't heard that, and that's not to...
Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. You're on your own with that. I'm good, bro.
Are you honestly about to slander the Legend EP?
I never really listened to it, and I saw him live earlier this year.
That's why.
Bro. I saw him this year earlier this year with Rod and Christ, and they were very meh live. I didn't get all the hubbub about them at all. I was like, this is kind of boring black metal.
Well, that's what they sound like now. That's what they sound like now. They sounded very different than their first two releases. It wasn't until their third album, which is one of my favorites, In the Absence of Light, that they kind of went more traditional black metal sounding, and then they did Becoming, which was more atmospheric black, and they just kind of evolved from there. It's a lot more traditional sounding, but as Bog was saying, Legend is very much a metalcore, black metal and metalcore marriage, and it's pretty interesting.
I'll give it a shot sometime, see what's up with it.
One thing that I want to throw onto this just as a parting note is I love how unabashedly poppy certain riffs can become in atmospheric black metal these days. People really don't have a lot of problem looking back to some of the groovier riffs from, I'll say, kind of late 80s Judas Priest. And I'm not going to call out some releases from other bands from Portland, Oregon area that, you know, might draw a little bit of ire from a certain segment of the community. But I think that is also utilized so wonderfully on this Black Braid 1 record with some of the vintage tone to sort of, you know, conjure up a little bit of nostalgia. And then they take you along with this nice little dancey interlude with some of these fun leads that they have in here. It's just overall really, really masterfully executed.
The Blink 1 Culty 2 sound they've got going on.
The Blink 1 Culty 2. Absolutely.
I will say that song went over really well at Maryland Death Fest. That opening song, that Uwata song, I liked it live. Didn't like a record live, though. It was a banger, I'm not going to lie.
Shh, don't say their name. I tried so hard to avoid it. Duel's giving us the fucking hand over the face right now.
What are you doing, bro?
I didn't get the message. I saw like twice this year. And yeah, enough said on that. Once was enough.
Yeah, let's move on. So, gentlemen, whichever one of you wants to take the wheel here, give us some of your favorite black metal releases of 2022.
All right, I'm going to dive in here. And so just recently, Enslaved went ahead and released a couple of singles off of their new record. The first one titled Congelia. And I'm a big fan of Enslaved. Anybody who has listened to the podcast over the course of the past 4 years that we've been around now, can we give ourselves a little bit of a golf clap for just that unto itself? It's kind of impressive.
But only 2 years with the pod, but, you know, halfway through the process.
I will say that it starts out, I think you know, the initial listen, I said this is black as shit for old for contemporary Enslaved. But if you listen to it, it's actually got really art house very quickly because there is that traditional black metal riff, and then they're basically overlaying an entirely different song that does not match up at all on top of it. And so you're kind of like, I'm not sure which one I'm listening to. You have to take your pick. You know, do you stick with the original? I feel like this in some ways is a personality test to say, do I want to listen to the original riff that they portrayed, or do I want to listen to the one that's been sort of forced upon me? Upon it. So it's a little bit of a cacophony, and I use that word in a negative sense here, you know, because I think it's a little bit hard to discern. Did you all have any feelings about that?
would be absolutely diabolic from the band. There's like, let's just put out two songs, both in 4/4. One is black metal. One is whatever this atmospheric poppy Euro fuck metal that we've been doing the last few years. And we'll just let the fans decide which one is the actual theme of the song and which one's the backing instrumental. That's an amazing fucking strategy, I have to say.
It's yeah. Sound great.
No, it's very weird. I listened to it on the way to record this in my car, and you hear the black metal, then you hear the song. It's just like,
then, you know, when I first heard this, I said, is there another, like, do I have another YouTube tab open in Chrome right now that's playing something else over this that I can't fucking discern? But lo and behold, that's how it is.
It's interesting. I actually like it quite a bit, honestly. I would say, honestly, go so far as say I like it more than a lot of songs off the last Enslaved release, which I thought was
right. Wait, let's clarify. Is it actually interesting? Like, holy shit, Animals as Leaders type interesting?
Or no, that obviously not that interesting.
Or is it like when a casual hears Diocletian, it's like, that's interesting?
No, I mean, I enjoyed it quite a bit, actually. So it's been, the last Enslaved record I legit truly enjoy was Reacher back in 2012. So maybe after 10 years, they're writing shit that's going to put me back on the train, so to speak. So I quite enjoyed the song, actually, surprisingly. I didn't think I would. I was like,
Well, much like Opeth, the Enslaved train is filled with a lot of new onboarders, shall we say. I don't think there's room for you anymore.
Well, you go fuck yourself. I'll
stand, back. Bitch.
Rune 2006. I bought with my, you know, also with my parents. I fucking saved allowance money to buy that record. Like, I used.
Yeah.
It was like freaking $3.55 bucks at like a UCD store. It was fucking great. So yeah, I'm a middle career Enslaved OG fan. So go fuck yourself. That's not to say about that.
All right. Well, let's jump into the second single off of the upcoming release called Kingdom. And so this thing is front loaded with basically all kinds of jazzy guitar shredding for the first almost like minute and 30 seconds of the track. And then after that, it's this riff that's repeated over and over again, and there's basically like an old man kind of singing in the background for like another 2 minutes and 50 seconds or so. So
it's what the fuck is this, the Velvet Underground?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit of a head scratcher. I am a huge Enslaved fan, but some of the melodies that we saw on Utgard, I feel like are present, but they're being abstracted by overlays and sort of interference rather than intricacy in the compositions, which is in one of my notes here says, I think they've gone art house, which I think if any band was going to do it, I would actually really love to see Enslaved go completely fine art. I think that they're primed at this point in their career to go ahead and do it. And, you know, I think it's kind of cool. I'm going to respect them for it. But it definitely is going to reduce the listenability. And so these two singles, I'm throwing up huge air quotes right now for those who are obviously not on the Slack chat or on the Zoom to see me do this. But as a huge fan, it's curious. I said that Planets, what was the last one called? Planets on the Caravan?
Caravan of the Outer Worlds.
Caravan of the Outer Worlds was a little bit of a change in musical direction, and I said I was curious to see if they were going to continue that through, and I would say at this point, definitely. I would say they are definitely carrying that through with certainly a more electronic influence too, which is cool because, I mean, you know, they've put out enough fucking black metal in their lives to satisfy any cult fan. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the listenability is going up. So I'm actually like anxiously, you know, curious to see what this new record is going to be like. It doesn't mean that it's going to be on the top 10 for the year. So anyways, that's what I have to say about that.
No, I mean, also keep in mind, this is their 16th fucking album. They've been going since like the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, at this point, why the fuck not? I mean, you have all the, you know, the early shit Frost and the middling kind of prog shit. Now they're essentially full black metal Pink Floyd. If you're on the train, you're on the train for life at this point. So fuck it. So it's actually a pretty interesting spot to be in a career. But honestly, I enjoyed all three singles a lot more than I thought I did. So I'm actually, for the first time in 10 years, actually kind of excited for an Enslaved record. So we'll see.
Golf clap. He's excited. Anybody else, Bog, do you have any other releases?
We, I have no notes on it, but Dark Funeral did put out a release this year, 2022, and some reviewers are saying it's probably the best thing they've ever put out. I think they have a new singer, right?
Sounds
yes.
like a
Dark Funeral, like yeah.
Sounds like a paid review if I ever heard one.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, you got to throw a little payola if you want to get into Loudwire these days, to quote Owen from.
Oh, Loudwire's a joke, dude. Jesus Christ. Loudwire's a joke. What do you, Corey Taylor said about this? No, I don't actually. Shut the fuck up. Anyways.
Okay, let's get back into the list. Let's start off with some EPs you need to be hearing about in the world of black metal.
I can do it! God damn it! Okay, continue.
All right, the Affirmative Action Liberal of the podcast. Holder's new EP, The Eternal Fanfare. So, stop laughing, guys. Stop laughing. You know, this is the whole thing. Whenever there's a woman in fucking extreme metal, everyone's always like, oh, it's a woman in metal, women metal. It's like, it's the first thing. This should not be the first thing you think about here. It's the more medieval, melodic brand of evil-sounding traditional black metal that you should be focusing on here.
Obviously.
Quite fierce, I should say. Fierce enough that comparisons to Dark and Nocturne Slaughter Cult are quite apt. I do think that, however, the clean vocal sections give them their own identity, clear of those Dark and Nocturne Slaughter Cult fucking vibes. Not that they're insulting by any stretch of the imagination. And I, for one, am excited to hear more from this one woman or person. I'm not sure how they identify. Black metal project. Bogrovich, I know you just got to see Holder live. So
jealous.
You could shed some more light on how that is. And your thoughts on the EP, The Eternal Fanfare.
I think it's pretty traditional. And when I say traditional, we're reaching even 100%. Into, dare I say, the prison years. From Burzum.
I never listened to Burzum.
It's very 90s black metal.
100%.
The Dark and Nocturne Slaughter Cult vibe is like very much that. Like, it's not quite Impaled Nazarene. It's more Norwegian than that as far as black metal goes, but it's not too far away from that.
Yeah, when I saw Holder, they played a great set, and the crowd was into it, and I went and got coffee the next day from a local shop, and they were all wearing Holder t-shirts. So clearly Holder has captured the imagination of a certain demographic in black metal. They played their music really well, and I think that the lead woman, she does corpse paint. She does the Euronymous corpse paint, which I'm certainly is a, you know, not, shielded homage to the style of music that they're trying to get into. So that kind of is what it is in many ways.
I kind of love that. It just actually just blew my mind to think that someone would purposefully ape the clearly identifiable corpse paint that another famous black metal artist would wear. I guess the fact that they're dead makes it easier. I guess you wouldn't get away with it quite as easily if you just aped a bot's clearly recognizable face paint on stage.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
She wore a bullet belt. I mean, in many ways, they were doing their best to put on their, you know, Euronymous that they could as a front woman in a band. So I applaud them for that. And all the notes were right. There was no, you know, they were pretty much a flawless presentation. It wasn't, you know, the most engaging black metal presentation I've ever seen. I think that they use a vocal filter because there was no
getting loud.
There was no crowd chit chat. And I think part of that, which, you know, groups that I really like, including Zeal and Ardor, you know, I think at Manuel, he had two mics, one that he, you know, would sing into, and then he had the other one, which clearly had some kind of distortion filter running through it. I don't look down on it. I think that there are many who would, but for me these days, there are so many other elements within the genre, including mainly good guitar playing, that means so much more to me, rather than the ability to have a natural ability to do harsh vocals, which I don't have a great ability to do myself. And so I don't look down my nose at anybody who's getting a little bit of help, especially when they're gaining notoriety and also sort of propelling the genre forward. So that's my point of view on that.
Give us your thoughts on the Eternal Fanfare, Richard.
All right, this was another case of, you know, a lot of notoriety this record. I'm ignoring its black metal, but gave it a fair shot and really enjoyed it. Very, very obviously traditional, straightforward black metal. It was actually one of the EPs. I felt it got better as it went on. Like the intro song, the first song, it's all right. The second song's a little better. The third song, the title track, The Eternal Fanfare, I feel is the best. It's very aggressive, a little heavier than the other songs. I'd say kind of a slight death metal influence, in my humble opinion at least. And I really enjoyed the final track, The Perilous Journey, with this kind of slower, more melancholic vibes to it and the really great use of clean vocals. But yeah, I'm really excited to hear some more music by them, and I plan on going back and listening. I think they have two previous albums, or at least one full length, going back and giving that a shot. So it's just, it's nice to hear these records that I'm hearing a lot about, instead of them being like dog shit, they're actually really good. So it's a nice change of pace compared to the usual shit we get. Moving forward.
So we're going to go to one of my favorite countries in all of black metal, that is Germany. We find Erzfeind. It translates to arch enemy. I know all you true cult fanboys just fucking had a heart attack. Trust me, their namesake is the only thing they share in common with that Melodeath band. Slow, brooding, deliberate, heartfelt, dismal, grim. These are many attributes that you can all attribute to German occult black metalers, Erzfeind. You should also add prolific, though, because they released not one, not two, but three EPs this year. Surely doing the Dark Lord's work for sure with that sort of output. Granted, their sound's not going to be for every single black metal fan, but for those of you who are into this really beautiful sound, the more, I guess you could say, finding appreciation in the dismally grim atmospheric sounds of someone who's just thrown themselves off a building. That's the music that Erzfeind makes. Those are the people that... Yeah, essentially. Those are the people that Erzfeind makes music for. The songs flow seamlessly, and considering the fact that it's not one album but three EPs, all of them flow really seamlessly together. They're great to re-listen to over and over again. There is a nice emotional flow to all three of these EPs. And not only that, but it's fucking evil. Like black metal's supposed to be. Evil. I love it. Absolutely fucking love it. Low key, this is the second best hidden gem on this whole list. Second best.
Second. So there's a number one.
Yes, that has not been mentioned yet. They're coming last. Erzfeind. Erzfeind. You will not find this band on many of year end lists, but they should be. Erzfeind. You could find their EPs, Behaft Beckett, or Verm, or Muspili, on Spotify or wherever else you can fucking find music. Great shit. Last EP I want to talk about is from another new darling in the world of black metal, and that's Canon and Fieber. They also released multiple EPs this year, one called Yankee Division and one called Der Fusilier. Canon and Fieber's latest EPs once again demonstrates why it's one of the most exciting up-and-coming bands in all of black metal. They utilize a little bit more melodic death metal and melodic black metal influences on this release than they did on prior albums. Still the same World War I themes sort of shit. another added bonus that you could describe is that at least on the Yankee Division EP, it is one of the final recorded works of our dear departed brother, Trevor Strand. He is on the Yankee Division. Nice. Yeah, he's on the Yankee Division Part 1. You should definitely check it out for that reason alone, but also stick around for the fact that it's just a quality black metal EP, as is the follow-up, Derek Fusilier. Great shit.
I was a big fan of their last record, their 2020 record, Men Shenmu. I probably butchered that, but that's a great fucking album. So I didn't know that EP's out. So thank you for talking about that. So after you're done with this, I'm going to check that shit out.
Yeah, I think it's Men Shenmu is that album from 2020. It's more aggressive, hyper, fast-paced 1914. And if you listen to the podcast, you know I really fucking like 1914.
Yes, they're awesome. Yes.
That's a hell of a compliment, and I think this band is every bit as good, but just doing it a little bit more straightforwardly and aggressively as far as that same style of metal. Anyway, those are the best black metal EPs of the year so far. I have 1, 2, 3, 4 more albums I'm going to talk about, but before I get to them, I'm going to let Richard Donahue give you his top black metal releases in 2022.
All right, well, it's a real short list here. Finnish black metal band Ymir, so this is how you pronounce it, Y-M-I-R, and with their self-titled record, which I was very much a big fan of. Very frosty, very straightforward, kind of more keys in the background, not very much in the forefront, like, say, a Dimmu Borgir, but just encompass that 90s black metal melodic frosty sound very fucking well. And the follow-up to the record came out this year. No advertising or nothing. Just dropped a Bandcamp or new records out. It's very much in black metal style. The name of the release is Aeons of Sorrow. And I will say it's not quite as direct. That's not the right word. It's not quite, it doesn't come to you all at once like the self-titled record did. This one I feel is a take a kind of a couple listens to catch all the hooks and hints, all the stuff in the background. The one of the main differences I did notice, there's a lot more kind of like clean baritone vocal style sections, some more spoken word parts, a few more keys still in the background than not in your face, but definitely if you're into that style of black metal, I would highly recommend this record. Much like Ultar, my favorite tracks were the last three on the album, which would be Storm of Shadows, Witches, and Night Winds. And as far as EPs, my Death Doom brother from Salt Lake City turned me on to this band, Moonlight Sorcery. They named the EP, it came out February this year, Piercing Through the Frozen Eternity.
Absolute fucking phenomenal release.
Yes, 100%. Looking at the Bandcamp page, listening to it, somebody put, this what would sound like if Yngwie Malmsteen played black metal. I feel it's pretty on point, actually. It also has a fantasy element as well. Whereas Ultar had the kind of otherworldly aspect, this very much has a very fantasy element. Maybe it's the keyboards, maybe it's the shredding guitars, but it's definitely something you don't really hear a lot in black metal, like happy shredding guitars, but it works with the shrill coldness. So if you're into something a little different and aggressive in your black metal, I would highly recommend this EP as well. Hopefully we'll get a full length in the next year or two.
Hopefully so, if it's anywhere near the quality of this. It reminds me a lot of Storm Keep and Ninkarsag, who put out albums last year. This is also a great segue. Is this your last one that you have, by the way, before I segue?
Yes, those are my only two, actually.
Okay,
yes.
So as you said, this album is fucking phenomenal, and I don't want to overshadow it, but it is just an EP, so I don't want to act like it's top release of the year or anything, but you should definitely check it out. It's definitely a marker that's been put down for a band that might be about to drop the best black metal album of 2023.
Best track on the album, Wolven Hour, by the way, in my humble opinion. Fucking great.
Wolven Hour, runner up, Thy Light is Ice. Fucking phenomenal. Definitely check this shit out. my bandmate Jake was texting me about it as we were recording. I sent him the link and said this was filthy. And he's like, yes, dude, the Wolven Hour. And we were discussing the Wolven Hour before we were here on air too. Glad to hear that everyone's on board. The Wolven Hour, Moonlight Sorcery. Check that shit the fuck out. Anyway, let's hop back into the crescendo, the final bits of my top black metal releases of 2022. Let's listen to something traditional, or at least talk about it anyway. We're going to, of course, talk about Nord Gevel. I don't know. You'd figure with how much black metal I listen to, I would know how to pronounce some of these names, but I don't. Sorry. Anyway, their new release is called Navhol. Again, about the pronunciation. Sorry. Do bands need to evolve to stay relevant in the world of metal? That's a no. Do bands need to evolve in the world of underground metal? That's a big fuck no. Meet the latest Nord Gevel album, Navhol. Is it too different than the last ones? Fuck no. Does it need to be? Also fuck no. Frosty riffs, pissed off percussion, plenty of Satan abounds on this love letter to the more primal sounding corners of the Norwegian black metal world. Horns up from start to finish. Worth a second or even third listen if you want to pick out the extra pieces of Satan that you might have missed as your eardrums are being skewered from the opening track to the last. Also, want to say our boy from Drowned in Black, the place you should be getting your fucking denim vest for, also outfits Nord Gevel.
Hell yeah.
This podcast is not endorsed by Drowned in Black nor Nord Gevel. Just wanted to call out cool people doing cool shit with cool bands.
I need a new vest anyways.
So we were talking a little bit about Moonlight Sorcery and how they reminded me of Ninkar Sok and Stormkeep. Well, you know what? So the fuck is Storm Ruler and their album Sacred Rites and Black Metal. Last year, Stormkeep and Ninkar Sok delivered the two of the best albums in all of black metal that I've heard in a really long time. And just 1 year later, a new challenger approaches. Fight. And while I won't quite put this on the same pedestal as the other two, there's still fucking 20 songs. Yes, 20. It's 70 plus minutes of material on this absolute beast of a fucking album. And that ensures that there's multiple songs that are here to scratch whatever itch you want when it comes to black metal. Whether it's symphonic epicness, melodic death metal tinged anthems, or atmospheric moodiness, this album has got you fucking covered. Give it a listen. Even if you have to break it up 5-6 songs at a time, because 20 songs, 70 plus minutes is fucking long, you will not be disappointed no matter what chunk of the album you
Were there a lot of like intros on it? Like intros like that? 20 songs, there has to be a few kind of intro-y-ish songs. Like, were there a lot of those?
There's two or three that are like a minute and a half, like Ren Faire horn type shit.
Okay.
Still, even if you combine them into the songs that they're basically intros for, that's still 17 tracks at 70 plus minutes.
No,
it's meaty. It's movie-esque. Borderline too long. And I like this record.
I actually got a chance to see these guys over for Rotted Christ in May in New Hampshire. And they're the first band to play. They were fucking phenomenal. Very, very noticeable dissection influence. Also, like a lot of heavier songs. There's a lot of variety in their set. Like I first saw, they're gonna be kind of dissection. No, they flipped the script, which is really nice. It wasn't just a John Nottebite worship band. So I need to give this record a proper listen for sure. So great live band.
Okay, three more. I miscounted. The next band is called Helltech Vrad, and their album Morgensruden's Helvet Head. I think I got that right. Sorry if I didn't. Anyway, medieval black metal, and goddamn does it sound grim. Pretty sure every single one of these instruments that is recorded on this album is not double-tracked at fucking all. AKA, bare minimum. It sounds cult. It sounds grim. It sounds bare bones. That's going to turn some people off. It's going to sound a little thin. And that's not before we even get to the really bad Renaissance Fair horns that appeal
on this album, alongside the wailing vocals that sound like a feral cat that is not long for this world. Not for the casuals, this album. In response, if you ever said, how the fuck do you appreciate this bullshit? I'd agree you had a point. However, if you can get past wailing vocal shit production and rather Ren Faire-esque approach to some of the instrumentation, you're going to find a really fucking awesome raw black metal album that reminds you just why we love this subgenre. The performance totally captures the absolute anguish, and the stripped down production really adds to the primal medieval occult devil worship vibe that's going on here. I'm not sure I would ever put this on a top 10 albums list of the year, but considering all the subgenres that black metal enfolds, it's definitely going on a top black metal releases of the year. Definitely worth checking out. That's Helltech Vrad, for those of you who missed it the first time. So I was going to list this band last. I kind of teased them earlier as far as new bands that should absolutely be at the forefront of the genre. And that is Ante Inferno and their album Antediluvian Dreamscapes. Often overlooked and criminally fucking so, the English metal scene just churns out not just good bands, but legendary fucking bands. I mean, think about this for a second. England's fucking metal Mount Rushmore is Black Sabbath, Motorhead, Judas Priest, and Iron Maiden. If that's not a fuck off list, I don't know what is. And they are still putting out influential bands in all fucking subgenres, whether it be Unal Nothrock, Electric Wizard, even fucking Woden's Throne or Winter Phylus.
Woden's Throne. Thanks for the shout out, Duel. If you didn't make it, I was about to.
Yes, that's for you, Barkovich. You're the one who
found Farkas.
Yes, there's an infinite number of amazing bands that are coming out of England, and I have to
say, yeah,
yes,
so many good.
And I have to say, and I have to say, we need to add Ante Inferno to the fucking list. Infernally majestic. Yes, let me repeat. Infernally majestic in all facets of sound and aesthetic, decadent and beautiful. The soundtrack of a hedonistic world consumed eternally for all. Somber and magisterial, dismal in its acceptance of all things that are fucked. Antediluvian Dreamscapes. I cannot think of a better title for this album. The images it conjures, its overall aesthetic, and just what it overall fucking sounds like. Can't miss album, definitive release in English black metal, must listen, cannot recommend enough. Cannot.
Totally sold me on the record. I'm down.
If you haven't fucking listened to it by the time the next episode, don't worry. I'm talking about it again on the top 10 list.
It's that good.
It is that good.
Hell yeah.
You know what else is that good? That might be even higher on that same list.
That new Megadeth record?
Yeah.
I won't go into spoilers. Cologne, Germany has a secret. And Cologne, Germany's secret is called fucking Ulthe. Ulthe has never done black metal by the book. Rather, they take most of the genre's hallmarks and they twist and they contort them into a maelstrom of nothing but ghastly hymns and depressing auditory bombs. Enter their most latest release, All That Has Never Been True. It is by far the most ambitious Ulthe album to date. Dark, evil, and unrelentingly grim in all facets of its execution, yet dynamic and melodic at times. And it's an album that begs to have you peer behind the curtain of whatever track comes next. Infinitely re-listenable, which is rare for such a grim musical odyssey. But here we are. There are a few releases this year that I would rather listen to than this one in any genre of music. This is an absolute triumph in the world of not just underground black metal, but black metal and heavy metal in general. Ulthe's All That Has Never Been True.
from the heart. And with that, that wraps up my top black metal releases of 2022. Gentlemen, I believe you've already given your lists. Anything you might have forgotten that you want to leave the listeners with, speak now or forever hold your grim and frostbitten peace.
Pestilent Hex actually put out a record this year.
Holy fuck. How did I forget the Ashen Abhorrence? It's one of the greatest fucking things that's been put out this goddamn year. An absolute love letter to 90s symphonic black metal, a la early Dimmu Borgir and Emperor. Holy fucking shit. I can't believe I almost forgot that, Donahue. It's fantastic. And I love that record 10 times more than you do. So
I'd say 5 times more actually.
Okay, well, give us your thoughts on it, because you reminded me of it. I don't deserve, I don't deserve to give it its plaudits. You get it.
So the reason I first heard about this band was the fact that LL, whose real name is Laurie Locksonen, butcher's name, the Finnish man who is behind Desolate Shrines, one of my favorite Finnish bands, and Convocation. Death Doom black metal type stuff. And this, and him and Matti Mäkelä, who is the guitarist of Dark Descent and fantastic Finnish death metal band Corpse Seth, their guitarist and backing vocalist.
I kind of love how he used Finnish man in the same way that you use Florida man. It's just a stand in. Florida man is stand in for methed out activities, and Finnish man was for metal activities. I just kind
of 100%. But they essentially combined their love of 90s symphonic black metal and put together and put some really awesome stuff. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't like as much as I thought I would, but again, this is one listen. I'm half asleep, like 5 beers in, like 3 cups of coffee again. So I was a bit skewed, I'm not going to lie. So I very, very much did enjoy this record. My favorite songs, the last two, the tracks, The Hag and Banishment. But if you're into that 90s symphonic style, it doesn't quite reach the ethereal evilness of Emperor, but they're also going for more a straightforward approach and not going being all progressive and... you know, trying to ascend the mountain, so to speak. So maybe I'm giving them stuff they don't deserve.
I think you're 100% correct. It's very much a more straightforward sound. They're not quite as ambitious in their scope of sound as Emperor. And the reason I mentioned early Dimmu Borgir, and I don't mean this in a negative sense, but their straightforwardness does reach almost in sort of Diaboli levels of this is what we do.
Production, production wise, it's clean to the, what you with this type of metal. This is what you kind of want. You don't want it to sound raw, and pff, like, you know, it's like playing a, yeah.
it's 4 minutes of symphonic Satan
that essentially, yes,
sounds like it was produced for 4 minutes of symbolic Satan. And for some people, that ruins the Satan, the production value of it. But I think it sounds great. Pestilent Hex, the Ashen Abhorrence. Can't believe I forgot it. One of the best releases in black metal 2022.
You got you, buddy. So, and that's what those are. That's the last one I have. So, just want to hit on that.
All right. Yeah. Let's go ahead and fuck off now. All right, gentlemen. I think that'll about do it for the best black metal releases of 2022. Hopefully, it won't be 4 more years before we do this special. But you know what? If it's 4 years from now and I'm still doing this podcast with you gentlemen, I'll say I'm still the winner in this situation. For the Fundamentalist Podcast, I am dual guest joined by Peter Bogg.
Hello, hello. Goodbye, goodbye.
That's the one. And Richard Donahue.
Thank you very much for listening. Have a fantastic evening. Be safe out there.
We will talk to all of you motherfuckers very soon when we do our top 10 overall releases of 2022 and a very special Under the Knife, which will be announced soon. Until then, thank you very much for making the Fundamentalist Podcast a part of your life in the year 2022. Goodbye.